Welcome to episode number 38 of the Board Game OK podcast. Recorded in hot and steamy Helsinki, Finland, except it's not so hot and steamy because I have fresh news from Luis, who just came from outside and told me, Jonas, it's cold outside.
It's actually quite surprisingly cold, but it was hot and steamy earlier today.
Yeah. I'm your co-host Jonas, and with me is my co-host Luis.
Hello, everyone.
Luis, today you will finally have to tell me how many games do you actually own, as we will be discussing collection sizes. But before we get to the main topic of the episode, we will review Power Vacuum and Soothsayers. Luis, do you want to talk to us about Power Vacuum?
Power Vacuum is a trick-taking, but also a negotiation game. It's your basic trick-taking game. The whole premise of the game is that the Supreme Vacuum Leader has passed away, and you are appliances buying for control of the party. It's like a little bit of communist theme, like Russian theme or whatever. So you are vying for control of the party, and you do this by playing a trick-taking game. You can play up to five people, and there is five appliances. And what you want to do at the beginning of each round is to select who's going to have the most power and who's going to have the least power at the end of the round. In the middle, all of the five appliances are represented, and you can move power around throughout the game by playing a trick-taking game. At the end of the round, if you are able to guess correctly who will have the most power and who will have the least power, you can get some victory points or some power. And then based on that, you can then transform it into some nice little pieces of a monument that represent 10 victory points. Whoever gets to 40 victory points wins the game. Now, this is a traditional trick-taking game where you must follow. You have a trump suit, which is very common in many trick-taking games, but you also have a super trump suit that can win this trump suit.
But only the trump suit.
Only the trump suit. And you can only play the trump suit if you don't have, obviously, if somebody leads with the trump suit, or if you don't have cards of the lead suit. However, the super trump suit you can play whenever, but it only wins if you have the trump suit. The tricky thing about here is that winning the trick-taking game doesn't mean that much in this game. You can get, like, you can save a card and you can get a power, but the most important thing is playing the lowest card. If you're the person that played the lowest card in the game, you are able to move power around, which is the main way you will get victory points at the end of the game, by getting that selection of who has the most power or the least power first. Jonas, I think I did a terrible job at explaining the game, but I think you get the gist of it. What, you have played this game with me a couple of times.
Yeah, two times to be exact.
Yeah.
I think this is a very hard game to explain, this whole power movement.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really, I don't know how to paint the picture of it. You have five suits. Each suit has a certain amount of power to it. In every given trick, two of the suits are connected together, and you can move the power between them. So you can move a little bit of power from the suit you don't want to win to the power to the suit you want to win.
Yeah.
If they are connected.
Yeah.
And when you're done, then you move one of the connections. So if you had red and green connected first and you want red to win, at least what I would do is I move power from the green to the red. Then I would move the red connection to, I don't know, for example, to white.
Yeah.
To protect the red so no one can do any messing with the red.
Yeah. And I think this is the weirdest part of this game indeed, because I think the way power moves around and the way people interact with this power can be very random if people have not played the game before. We recently played it in this Terrassicon that we had with Simone, and I think that was my worst experience with the game so far.
Oh, really? That was a really great experience.
Oh, really?
The first time we played it, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And this time I thought that, well, I wonder if I'm going to enjoy it. Maybe it was just a very novel, fun experience the one time we played it.
Yeah.
Played it again. And I thought that, hey, this is as much fun as it was the first time.
Okay. I liked it, but I thought the movement of the power was super random this time around. Like, people were not really getting it.
Oh, really?
I think a couple of people were like, yeah, I move here. And then the consequences of those moves were like, it felt unintentional for the mover. They're like, I'll just do this. And I'm like, I don't think they're understanding the repercussions of that.
Well, I don't remember that. I think it felt that people knew what they were doing, but then where people messed up were that they left the connection. Because there was that one round where you all were targeting me.
Yeah.
Trying to make my bed go wrong.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the people who were moving the power, thought that they're going to do fine, leaving their connection to the suit that I want to be the highest, and then move the other connection to the to some other suit that has less power, hoping, I guess, that someone will continue sucking off power from there. But then I knew that, okay, this is time I'm going to play the lowest card.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. I'll move even more power there, and then I move it away from my
suit.
Yeah,
so I guess nobody expected you to have so many low cards that turn.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so it's great to hear that you had a great time, because I thought it was not the best version of that game. That was not the best representation of that game, that particular session that we had.
Yeah, what was missing?
Again, like I thought like maybe a bit of the negotiation part where like, let's work together to do this. I think we did it when you were already almost winning.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, let's just mess Jonas up.
Yeah.
But I think it was a little bit too late. And the previous rounds felt a bit random in the movement
of
power.
Well, it wasn't too late because I didn't end up winning.
Yes. Yeah. So it was good. And I actually ended up having almost as many points as you, which I was really surprised about in the very last round. So I don't know. But I have felt that the game was better than how I felt the game was this last win. But at the same time, I'm happy to hear that you felt it was a good session still, and it was still fun because I don't know. I thought like maybe if you don't have people that understand trick-taking games or don't understand the premise of this like moving power, if either of those are not really there, then the kind of the game breaks apart. And I felt like the second part was missing a bit from this game. Like the movement of power felt a bit more random for what I saw that people wanted to do, and like, okay, that's the wrong move if you really want your thing to succeed.
Yeah. I think Power Vacuum, in its essence, is a pretty random game.
Yeah.
First of all, you're dealt one beat card where you can say this suit should be highest and this suit should be the lowest. And that's it.
Yeah.
You don't get to make any decision after that. You can choose which suit is going to be the higher one and the lower one. That's the only decision you can make. But you can't choose the suits that are there. So that's one limiting factor.
Yeah.
That will affect your performance. The second big limiting factor is your hand.
Yeah.
What do you draw? In many trick takers, the way the hand is balanced is that, well, you can, for example, make a bid of your choice.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a bad hand. I will bid zero tricks. Yeah. I win zero tricks. I have a great hand. Oh, I will bid five tricks.
Yeah.
Power Vacuum, you don't do that kind of thing. And I can, like, it's pretty clear that if you draw two fours, two fives, two sixes, two sevens, that's a really bad hand.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have the highest cards. You can't win any tricks. And you don't have the lowest ones either. So you're not going to be able to move a lot of power.
Yeah, I think that was also part of my experience this last time, is that I got very bad hands many times where I'm like, okay, I'm not able to move power. I'm not able to win tricks. So I think that might have been painting my experience where like I didn't have that much fun with the game this time.
Yes, and I had a great hand. Yeah. I had great hands, so I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, so that can definitely happen with the game. Yeah. I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah, but the thing that kind of like makes up for these chaoticness and the randomness, the random elements of the game, is the social experience, dude.
Yeah.
You mentioned negotiation. It's not full negotiation, but it's there. That same feeling is there. You're not making exact deals with people, but you are colluding with each other. There's a lot of table talk going around. The theme adds to it because, I really like the theme.
Yeah.
The illustrations are great. It's not my typical preferred illustrator of illustrating, but I think in this theme, it's spot on.
Yeah.
It's the exact right illustration here.
Yeah, and all the cards are beautiful. And all of the theme is beautiful. It's just like kind of anthropomorphic appliances.
Yes, exactly so.
Yeah.
So to me, the magic of the game, or the magic of Power Vacuum, is the energy around the table, not the decisions that I get to make.
Great. Are you ready to give your rating?
This one is hard to rate. So I can go first.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a coward. I will bid five tricks. I will put my suit higher and I will put your suit lower instead of cowarding away from this review. Now, the thing I'm really on the fence about is this a 2-star game or is this a 3-star game for me?
I feel, and before you go, this is the first one where I wish we had a bigger number of star rating.
Okay.
Precisely because of this.
I think this is also the instances where I think it's great that we don't have a bigger number so that we don't get to go in the middle. So we don't get to stay sitting on the fence. No, we have to drop on either side. Yeah.
Okay.
The reason why I would want to put this into 3 stars is the energy around the table that I mentioned before. The reasons why I would want to put it on the 2 stars is, despite those fun moments, the trick-taking game itself is pretty lackluster. I don't feel that I get to exercise my trick-taking muscles that well. But, that's the reason why we can't go to 4 stars. We can't go to 1 star either, because it's still a very fun game to play. Even though I think this game, is it like below 7.0 on BGG? I think I have heard many people who are really into trick takers disliking Power Vacuum in general.
It does not feel like you. I think you're spot on. It doesn't feel like the trick taking element is really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 6.8 on BGG.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be the contrarian and I'm going to say 3 out of 4 stars for Power Vacuum.
All right. I was thinking exactly the same thing. Is this a 2 star? Is this a 3 star? And this is where I'm like, okay, if we had the 6 star rating, I would put it definitely at 4, which is like would be the third space down, which I don't think, same, like I don't think it's a 2. I think it doesn't deserve 2. I think it's too little, like too good for 2. I think 2 would be a misrepresentation. I also think it doesn't necessarily fulfill its 3. However, I have to choose one. And for very similar reasons that you said, I think I will also give it a 3. It's like a game that I want to see more people playing, a game that I want to see people getting introduced more, a game that I, despite its flaws, I feel like it's very pretty, it's worth teaching people, and people will have fun with. And it deserves barely, but it still deserves a 3 instead of a 2.
Yeah, a couple disclaimers I have to add to my 3-star rating. I don't think I would play it at any other count than 5 players. I think you really want more people around the table to have.
I think
that
it works really well at 4 as well. I know what you mean, but I think it works at 4. I would not play with less than 4.
Yeah. And then the second disclaimer is that I don't think I want to play this game necessarily with strangers. Or maybe I will, but with fun. They have to be fun strangers.
Fun strangers.
Yeah. You can't be too serious of a player.
No, you cannot be. But I guess that's also like with every game. But I guess there's some Euros that you can play with serious players.
Yes, and not even Euros. I like to play Maria with serious players. Don't have fun.
Serious strangers.
Serious strangers.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Wipe off that smile. stop chuckling.
Yeah, and let's just fight it out.
Yes.
Deck it out, I think you said in the last review. And that is Power Vacuum, a game designed by Caleb Wenzel Fisher, which I didn't mention at the beginning.
Thank you, Luis. Next up, Soothsayers. And since we are naming designers, Soothsayers designer is Jeff Crescent-Waite. I have not heard about this designer before.
I thought you were saying Waite, but that's his name.
Yeah. Jeff Crescent-Waite.
Good that I'm not editing this episode, because I will be like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah. No, that's okay. That's the designer. That's the game, Soothsayers, right? What is Soothsayers about? Soothsayers is a card game where on your turn, you either get money, get more cards to your hand, or play cards from your hand to your tableau. It's a tableau builder, wouldn't you say, Luis?
Yes.
And usually in tableau builders, your tableau grows either vertically or horizontally as you add more cards to a row or you overlap existing cards in a column. But in Soothsayers, you start with 4 cards in your tableau and you end with 4 cards in your tableau, and that's it. Okay, there are these tarot cards that you can add to your tableau as well, but those are also limited to max 4 cards. What are the twists of this tableau builder? Twist number one, if you level up cards in your tableau, you get a point token. But if someone then levels up higher than you, they steal that point token from you. So there's a lot of this back and forth racing for certain victory points. Twist number two. When I take an action on my turn, other players get to follow me and take a lesser form of that action. I have now played Soothsayers 7 times, 5 times with the correct rules. If we have time, I can talk about the first 2 times when I set up the game wrong. My last play was with you, Luis. What did you think of the game?
We played right or wrong?
We played it right. So the way we played it wrong in the first 2 games was that, okay, you get these tarot cards, lesser and greater tarot cards. There's 2 versions of these cards. You can choose which deck of tarot cards you play with. In my first 2 games, I shuffled everything together. We were playing the game and we just felt that, wait, this is going way too long. Why are we just keep drawing these bad tarot cards, these lesser tarot cards? But yeah, the problem was that I had mixed up the 2 decks. There were too many tarot cards in the deck.
Yeah. And now we played with the right rules, which we only had 1 set of cards. I found it pleasantly frustrating.
What was so frustrating about
it? It's the type of games where like you have not that many options, but multiple options, and you want to do everything, but you can only do one of the actions.
Yeah.
And then it's like, if I do take this action, then I'm not able to take this action on this turn. And if I don't take this action, then somebody else might take it from me. Yeah. And that pleasant frustration, it's always super rewarding in games.
Yeah. And then three turns later, you're going to think back to that moment and it's like, why did I do that? Exactly. I should have been doing that instead of going for these short-term victories.
I should have done that action that I said, no, I will not do it now. Yeah. I should have done it then because now I don't want to do it yet again because there's no point doing it anymore. But I thought, it was frustrating because I felt I was behind all the time. I felt like you two were definitely outmaneuvering me and have played the game before and I was doing something wrong, except with one particular suit where I'm like, I'm maybe doing things right here, but then I don't have the cards to do anything in the other suits because you had taken them all from me and they were not appearing from the deck. So I was a bit frustrated, but lo and behold, I ended up winning because you two were bickering with each other. So then I think you ignored me mostly. I think if you had noticed that I was about to win, you maybe could have done more about it.
Maybe, because you were crying so hard. And I also felt bad for you. You were just doing an earn and trade action. I'm just getting my coins. I'm just getting coins. I'll just get coins. Oh, I'm doing this badly. I'm just getting coins.
Yeah, at some point it was performative. I'm like, I'm just taking coins. I'm like, I hope they don't notice that I'm about to win. But for a long part of the game, it was not performative. Yeah. It was definitely like, fudge. I definitely not doing well in this game. Mm. So I don't know. I think that obviously tainted my experience positively. Like it biased me toward like, this is a better game. But it's a game that definitely I was on the fence when you ask whether we should play it again or not. Mm-hmm. I was very close to saying, like, let's just go again. Like,
yeah. And the reason why I asked whether you want to play it again was that I've always played it back to back. Every time I play it, it's always back to back. I have 7 plays. It's 7 because you only played it one time with me. It could have been 8 plays. Yeah, this game feels like a gamer's filler game. And I think I will keep bringing this game with me to game nights. It's fast. It's interactive. It's challenging. I have not solved the game, and I don't feel I'm even close to solving it. I still don't know what should I be doing in this game, and I'm about to play my 8th game of it.
How did you hear about this game, by the way?
Yeah, I think Board Game Barrage covered it and mentioned that, hey, this is pretty interesting, and that got me intrigued. I like the setting, the theme of the game. It's these tarot cards. I really like the visuals of the cards. I thought that, hey, this might be also fun with me and Chilla to play. So 2 points from that. First, about the theme and the setting. Some people say that theme and setting are 2 different things. Theme is mechanics that try to simulate something. Setting is the place where you are as players and it's communicated through art and flavor text. And I don't know if Soothsayers has either theme or setting. I don't really know who I am. Rulebook says that I'm a soothsayer. I'm trying to predict the future or something like that. I'm just playing tarot cards, right? Even Splendor has more setting because it's gems. You kind of feel like, hey, we're trying to get those gems. I want gems.
Yeah, yeah.
In this one, I'm like, well, I want to get to level 4 in here.
I am taking cards. You're not, what was it, enlist? No, you're not enlisting. You're not drafting. Yeah, you're just...
Yes, drafting cards and then you ascend your cards.
No, you're just playing cards.
Yeah. Then those 2-player games. So I did play this game with Chilla just as a 2-player game. Again, back to back. That was not as great of an experience. And that's because of the follow action mechanic. Mm. I really feel that you really, really, really need the 3rd player to make the whole follow action mechanic sing. So you get to kind of look around to see like who is building what action. How can I leech off from that action? Can I just completely never do draft action because Lewis is going to do it every time. And I can just get those couple cards that I need. If I only get a couple cards every turn, what should I do so that I can do something super useful with these free cards?
Yeah, I can imagine also that cards don't come up. Like sometimes you might need a card and then the market. This happened with a 3-player game. I can imagine though with a 2-player game, it can happen even more often.
Yeah, but that I don't think is so bad because the cards have like two purposes. They are a little bit of currency and then a little bit of effect. So many times you just find also top decking to see if you can just find a card.
Yeah.
And even with three-player games, yeah, it's just at some point you realize that, hey, you are missing the card that you need to get. That action follow system, I have heard some people compare this game to Race for the Galaxy because of this action follow thing. But this action economy feels like the opposite of Race for the Galaxy, because Race for the Galaxy, to me, it's primarily a two-player game. I really like the action follow economy in the two-player version of Race for the Galaxy. In Soothsayers, no, I want more than two players.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Race for the Galaxy, I don't think this game requires you to learn the deck through at all.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
You can just kind of like see the cards as they come up.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you knew some of the tarot cards, that could help.
It could help, yeah. It probably would give you some advantage. But I can already tell you now that in my eighth game, I will not feel super confident at all about my chances of victory, even if I would be playing against newbies.
How many people have you played with all player counts this one?
I think three is the max I've played here. So two games with two players, rest of the games, three players.
Do you think you would enjoy it with four or five? Because it goes up to five, right?
That is true. Yeah, I would be eager to try this. As I said earlier, this feels like a filler that I will keep taking to game nights. And if we finish a game earlier, then we can play a round or maybe even two games of Soothsayers.
Now you need to play once first to get to eight and then keep playing doubles.
Yeah. Or how is it? So if I play two times next time, then it's nine games.
Yeah.
That's a nice number. Then if I keep doing then doubles after that, I will end up with 13 at some point.
Yeah.
And 13, well, that's a scary number. And we're playing with tarot cards. Yes. Are you up for it? My 13th game of this tarot cards.
A new card that you have never seen before. What?
Yeah. Do you feel like you can rate the game based on your one play?
Yeah, I would be happy to give this game a 3-star review. Again, because it's my one play, I think chances are that if I played more, I would give it a 4. I don't want to give it a 4 with just one play. However, I think 3-star, very solid game. I would be happy to play whenever you have it. Would I recommend people buying it? Sure. That's a 3-star. What 3-star is?
I guess it depends. Depends. Yeah.
But for sure, it's something that I would be happy to play anytime we have extra space. Now that I know it, I would also like to play it with people that know it so it would move a bit faster.
And our game was particularly long. I don't know what it was. We were somehow just...
overthinking.
I don't know, overthinking. I think we were taking our actions fast. We were just fighting over the same victory points all the time. Those victory points were changing hands all the time.
Yeah. Okay, and I still enjoyed it. I still didn't feel it was super long, but good to know that it can even go faster than that. So 3 stars from me. What about you, Jonas?
Yeah, 3 stars from me as well. It is smooth play, even though you have this action follow mechanic, which you might think that it ends up with this clunky gameplay where you... Well, you do have to announce your actions and what level you're taking your action, but it's an easy announcement to make. Yeah. The game moves in a nice pace. It doesn't rock my world. I think that's the reason why it's not 4 stars.
Got it.
But I haven't solved it yet. Mm. And it's a simple game, which just keeps me curious.
Mm.
Yeah. And to me, it's an easy recommendation for the gamers. But I'm wondering if I'm liking this game because I'm more jaded about games in general, and this feels like a fresher game.
Mm.
Someone getting into the hobby might not see it with the same set of eyes and might find it a bit too opaque, less fun than some other games. I don't know.
Yeah, I can totally see that somebody may be being put off too complex for a simple card game or something like that. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it feels fresh, fresher than many other things that we played lately. So, good.
That was Soothsayers. On to the main topic of the episode, collection sizes. The reason why I picked this topic for today is that there was a time in my hobby when I was listening to different podcasts, watching different reviewers, and I was wondering, I wonder how many games do they own? Do they have 10 games, 100 games, 1,000 games, 10,000 games? How many? These days, I care less about it. But I thought that, hey, the collection sizes are something that people do ponder in this hobby. You know, do I have too many games? Rarely people ask, do I have too few games?
Yeah.
It's usually the opposite. That question is usually about, do I have too many? and yeah. what is too many.
Yeah. And yeah. most people get impressed by any hobby's collection size when you show it, like, whoa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's 50. It doesn't matter if it's 20, I would say.
Yeah, I think it starts from the 20.
Yeah.
Then the people like start going like, wow you yeah. are really into board
yeah,
games.
Yeah, yeah. Because nobody, like, if you're not into board games, then you have five. You have yes. three. You have some there hiding and they're not displayed prominently in your living room. They are yeah. somewhere else. And you have 20, 30, 50. People start getting impressed.
Yeah, and those five games that you have, you know them already. There's yeah. like, okay, they got the Monopoly. I see Uno. There is Yahtzee, maybe. Jenga, what would be the fifth game?
Well, nowadays, you could even throw like a code names that is
yeah,
more like
code names, fifth into the... Oh, you have like a little bit of interesting.
Yeah.
An interesting game here in your collection of five games, code names. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
But usually the 20 games that someone has, those might include titles that people have never seen before. So it adds to the experience yeah. of, wow, I didn't even know
yeah.
there exists 20 games in the world.
Yeah. Or a big Cool Mini or Not box. Where
oh,
like
yeah.
people are like, what is that big box?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Louis, what do you think? Do you think gamers stress about the collection sizes? Do you think I'm completely off?
I think, first of all, I think size doesn't matter. It matters what you do with your collection and how you treat it. And I think size is relative. And I know I'm being a bit facetious here, but size is relative like, to the space you have, right? And that is where it matter. It does matter and where people maybe start stressing about it. Or that I think that is a valid stress. I do think that a lot of people in the hobby might stress, like, I have too few games and I need more because I want variety. But well, maybe this is part of the conversation that we're going to have here. It's like, how many games do you really actually need to have variety? Yeah, to answer your question, I do think gamers stress about collection size.
And why? Why? What's there to stress about? Why is it not just a number?
I think it should be a number. And I think, again, I think the only reason why it should be stressful is like, if you want more games and you don't have space, or an invalid one is like, I don't have enough games and I already have 50 or 100 and I need more games because my collection is not complete. That is, I think, the wrong reason to stress about it. But I think that's the reason. Now, there is a point to be made about collecting games where that might be a completely different hobby than a gamer. Like, but maybe somebody just wants to have a collection for the sake of collecting.
Yeah, yeah. To me, the reason why I feel sometimes off about my collection is...
Stressed?
Yeah, stressed is the social pressure.
Mm.
You know, it's not normal to have this many games than I have.
Mm.
And I guess sometimes you think if other people think you have a problem
mm.
and you want people to think that you don't have a problem,
mm-hmm.
you are perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are normal.
I think that is something I can relate to. However, nowadays, I wear my board gamer flag proudly. I'm like, yes, and I might be a weirdo. Deal with it.
Yeah. With age, yeah, that feeling usually gets easier. I have completely accepted the fact that I am a complete weirdo.
Mm.
I've never been a normal person in my life, and I won't be. Mm. And I'm perfectly happy with that. All right. So what's so bad about owning too many games? Can you own too many games?
I think it depends a lot, again, on the space that you have, the people that you live with. If you live with roommates, if you live with a partner, they set the rules. They mm-hmm. might be like, you have too many games because there's no more space for you to put board games in the house. So I don't want to see these board games here anymore. You have to get rid of them. That can be a reason.
Yeah.
Obviously, the consumerism part of it, where like, if you're not going to play games, if you don't have enough time to play games,
uh-huh.
then why would you own too many games? Are you just throwing money away or creating more waste in the world? That can be a bad thing about having too mm-hmm. many games.
Yeah.
And obviously then you don't get to repeat play that many games because you want to yeah. try some other of your games.
If you have tons of games and you still want to play everything at least once, yeah, you might end up easily recycling a lot of games or like cycling through mm. a lot of games, but never really revisiting them and not having this experience of learning a game with people together and then mastering it,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're always changing to the next game. When it comes to junk, it doesn't have to be a big environmental effect for you to just kind of feel bad about the fact that I'm just buying this cardboard,
mm-hmm.
keeping it on my shelf for a little while, and then it at some point it's going to end into the trash pile, mm-hmm. right? That is already enough to kind of give you a little bit of like anxiety mm-hmm. about stuff. In general, at least for me, the more junk I have, the less clear mind I feel I have. I feel like it occupies my mind. Do you have this thing?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
It also makes it harder to make decisions about like, oh, what do I want to play? What do I want to take? If you had less games, the decisions would be simpler.
Yeah. And if I would have a 20-game collection, I would be able to pretty much pull out any of those 20 games from the shelf and teach it to you right away, and we can play a game. Now, I have to kind of feel like, hey, okay, give me 5-10 minutes. Oh, you want to play that game? All right, let me read the rule book and see what was exactly what needs to happen here. It's not possible for me anymore to know every game on my shelf and remember how to play it exactly.
Now, the counterpart of that is it's a good party trick to remember game rules of a game that you haven't played in like 2-3 years because you haven't taken it out of the collection. And then suddenly like, oh yeah, let me just remind myself, but like it more or less plays like this. The other day, Mia was like, how do you remember all of these rules from these all of these games? I'm like, I don't remember them exactly, but I have a vague memory of how it plays. And then she was pleasantly impressed. And I was like, yeah, of course, I have super skills that are very useless, except when you like games.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're doing that with your special someone, that's a little bit easier surrounding.
Yeah.
If you have 4 people looking at you as you're like browsing through the rule book, that's a little bit of a different thing, right?
Yeah.
Hey, 2 small collections. Can you have a too small of a collection?
Yes. Like that 5 game collection, that's too small. Like you need to have at least 30 games to have a decent collection.
So where does this 30 game number
just
come
out of
from?
The blue, just kind of coming from my top of my head. Like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, 30 games, just like really, how do you say it? Speedballing? No.
Speedballing?
Like how do you say
it? You speedballed the 30 games?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Just speedballing top of my head, I think 30 would be, you would have a decent variety on your collection, and you would still have a little bit of something and maybe a couple of the genres that you like the most, you could still have. But less than that, I think would be too restrictive. Like you might have some strategy game, but then you don't have, because it's less than, it's 20, then you don't have space for that filler, trick-taking game, or whatever.
Yep.
So.
And then you get into the opportunity cost thing. Mm-hmm. You have a game night, or you have some people over, they want to play a game, and you end up playing something that's all right, but you kind of know that you could have had a great time. And this is me not saying that, oh, you'll never be satisfied with your gaming experiences, but I do think there is a big difference between an amazing time versus a good time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
And you kind of have to have that variety to be able to pair the right game to the right moment and player count and other things, right?
Yeah. Another very impressive skill, but kind of useless in any other setting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to be your board game curator. And people enjoy that. Like, at least I do it for when we have company events and people are always like super satisfied that, oh, thank you, Luis, for choosing the right games for us. I think you probably do that too with your company sometimes. So I think that's still very rewarding when you manage to do that.
Absolutely.
What was the number for you? You didn't say.
What was the number? What would be a too small of a collection? I don't have like an exact number, but like 10 for sure sounds too small. 20, okay, we might be there. Depending if you're doing mainly family gaming, I think you can have like a good collection of 20. If you're playing with the same exact people all the time, 20 is probably all you need, right? But when you start having more variety with the people you're playing with, absolutely. You will end up needing tens and dozens of games. Mm. One thing I thought about, you know, the problems that could come up from like a small collection is that you get too good at every game because you play them too much.
Yeah.
And now you can't play that game with other people because you just end up beating them.
Yeah, you have to play with the same people then.
Yeah, exactly. Then at least personally, myself, I have postponed fun in my life for no good reason. Or the reason was that, oh, I shouldn't get this many games. Mm. And therefore, I should only have now this X amount of games. And because of those reasons, I didn't get into Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. I didn't try out exit games and I didn't try out pictures that we talked in our latest top 10 list. And all of these games, like I'm having fun with them now, but I could have already had so much fun with them earlier.
Yeah, you had a limit at some point of 50 games, right? And if you wanted to get a new game, you had to kick another game out.
Yep, that is true. I had a limit of 50 games. And I think this is like an arc that happens with many people who get into the board games. You start liking board games.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that there are so many board games. You want to try out a wide variety of different kind of board games. But you now have maybe those five board games that you started with.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a question of like, well, how long should it take for you to get to that 50 games, 100 games, 150 games, right? If there's 100 games that you want to try out, well, should you get those 100 games right now?
Mm-hmm.
Or should you kind of like space it out? And I thought that I probably shouldn't get 100 games right now. And I thought that, hey, I could have this limit of 50 games. My collection does not go above 50.
Mm-hmm.
It went above 50. And I'm very happy that it went above 50. I don't think I could have as much fun as I currently have with my games if I would have limited myself to 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever had these kind of limits where you say like, well, I'm kind of stop at 100 games and that is it?
No, I never had these limits myself where like, it was mostly limited by the space that, okay, we live in an apartment, so therefore there's no more space. I cannot get more games. Fortunately, I think what I mentioned before, I'm the curator of the board games at the company. So that's also like a collection there from mm-hmm. the company. And I was able for a while, especially during pandemic, to store a lot of my games in the office. And that made it possible to like keep increasing silently my collection. But I think had we not moved to our house, I don't think I would have been able to bring back the halls from Essen. So I think it matched pretty well, starting going to Essen and moving to the new house and then like not need to stress or worry about the space.
What's the perfect collection size to you?
I don't know. That's super interesting question because I'm going to go into a tangent here, like, which is super interesting to see American or / Canadian board game content creators versus UK board game content creators, like, for example, Shut Up and Sit Down, where like the amount of board games that American people can have because normally their houses are bigger. You can see it, right? Like they are most of the time sitting in front of their collections.
Yeah.
And there's like a whole wall of a huge room full of board games. Whereas like then you see Shut Up and Sit Down and they just have a shelf or a closet in a corner, all of them, because they all live in apartments and then there's like quite limited. So
yeah, well, I've been to UK. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Because it feels that there is no space in UK.
Exactly. So then, or I think about it in that way and it's like, they are both professional board gamers. Some of them are like probably more like into collecting and want to have more. I think Shut Up and Sit Down, from what I understand, are kind of forced to recycle them more. They get review copies and then they have to give them back or give them away. I don't know exactly how that works, but they're not able to like keep hauling. And then they just have very precise amount of space given to the board games. And if they want to put something, then they need to kick something out. So in that sense, it's like, okay, what is the right thing? What is the right amount? I would say just, and this is not something I follow or will ever follow, but I think the right amount should be 100. Like that is...
And that's for you. That's the perfect collection size for you.
No.
Oh.
Like, the perfect collection size for me is as many as I can fit. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I think if you are aiming to like a good variety, good games, curate your collection, always keep kind of wondering which games should stay, which games should go because I'm limited to 100, I think you still would get good variety and a solid amount of fun without having to sacrifice future fun. And maybe you have a buffer of 100.
Sacrifice future fun. But what is this like, future
like
fun this,
like what you said, that you were sacrificing fun because you were not allowing yourself to get into Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective because you had a limit of 50. I think with 100.
But what if you have no limit? And then you wouldn't have to sacrifice future fun.
Yeah, but then again, then we go into like, then there's no, like the limit is unlimited. You ask what's the limit? And I think like...
I ask what's like, the perfect collection size? What's the sweet spot?
What is it? I think it should be 100.
Should be 100.
I think 100 probably leaves you in a place where, again, it's also easier. Like you don't get these problems of like what to choose. I don't get to play my games enough. I have to... I think it should be 100. Will I follow that? Do I follow that? 100% no. But I think if we're aiming for a number, maybe 150. I'll go a little bit up. 150. 150, you get enough variety and not that you don't go into these issues with bigger collections. What about you? What do you think?
Perfect collection size to me is everything fits onto my shelves and I always have something I'm excited about.
That is a non-answer.
Why is it a non-answer? Because I have a limited amount of space on my shelves.
You do, but now you're renovating another house where you will have another shelf.
Well, I don't have any shelves in that house yet.
We're talking about the cottage collection. So you will have another collection there.
Yeah.
How do you account that? Is it a duplicate collection? Are they separate collections?
I think it's still going to be very much the same rule of thumb. As long as it fits under the shelves and there's something I'm excited about.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about the games that you're no longer excited about, but they're still in the collection because they fit?
Yeah. And because some of those games, they spark joy.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, hey, I don't necessarily want to push this game to people that much. I'm not eager for my next play. But this game, there's just something I love about it. Either I had really great memories with it, or I just think it's a great piece of art.
Mm.
You know, I think it's a great piece of game design or a contrarian piece of game design that I want to have on my shelf. It just sparks joy.
Yeah.
And then you have games where it's that, hey, they are not in active rotation in the game group, but they are great games.
Mm.
And I'm always down for a game.
Mm.
And it's always happy to have that, let's say, Ra in my game collection. I'm not taking Ra to our Sunday games. I'm not suggesting on Sundays, like, hey, should we play Ra? But I want to have it because it's always such a good time. Mm. I want to always have it available.
All right.
Okay. Now it's time for confessions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get real. Louis, how many games do you own?
So I tried to do some work into updating my list. I was very inefficient at doing this, and I'm sure it's not fully updated. However, the last count is 264. So if you count that some of them might not be there, maybe let's say 284. That, however, includes expansions, because I'm just counting like the number in Board Game Geek. So sometimes like I have the box of Sherlock Holmes.
Uh-huh.
So all the four boxes are there, are counted as one.
Okay.
I counted as one separate. So they are four instead of just being one.
They are four games.
Yeah.
Instead of one. Yeah.
So that adds to the number without necessarily adding to the number, because they're not different games. They're just different boxes.
But if you would remove those, you wouldn't still fall under 200.
I don't think I would fall under 200, no. Also, I add here in my collection games that are the companies, because I have access to them. I have very easy access to them. I'm able to just borrow them from the company. Most of the time I purchase them, and I am able to like take them whenever I want or play them with our group, so that I also put them in my collection, because there's no easy way to separate that between I own it and the company owns it. It's just like games that I kind of have access to. So that's also included within these 264. So yeah, that is my number.
Yeah.
And it's still not enough.
Ah.
I mean, no, it's more than enough. However, I think I will keep buying games, and I have a very hard time getting rid of games.
Mm.
I have never gotten rid of a single game.
Yes, but that's a topic for another episode.
Yes.
How to get rid of games.
How about you?
Well, I own the perfect amount of games, 150.
Really?
Yeah.
So you went from 50 a couple of years back. A couple of years back, you still had like this limit of 50.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. And now it's 100. Like you have tripled your collection in 2 years.
Yes.
What kind of maniac are you?
Well, I was about to say that, hey, I will give you my tips so you too, listener, can triple your collection in just a few years. This is possible. It's not that hard. All right. I think a couple essence. They add a nice chunk of games.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, just keep buying games. Simple as that. I think at some point, once the 50...
So what's your tips?
Yeah.
Go to Essen and keep buying games.
Yeah. Yeah. the biggest tip probably would be stop limiting yourself to 50 games, X amount of games, whatever you put for yourself. Or limit whatever works for you. Because I also can get the thing that if you don't feel good about the amount of games you own, then yeah, you should probably not triple the amount of games you do own, right? But once I went past the 50 limit and I started playing some games that I had kept for a very long time on my wish list, and then realized that this is so much fun, why did I not get this sooner to play with Chilla or play with the group? If something seems really good, I do get it.
Yeah, well, we have to also clarify that we are in a very privileged position to also be able to do this, right?
Yeah.
We're able to spend money that we hard earn, but like it's something that maybe other people would not be necessarily able to do, but probably everybody that is listening to this podcast is on a very similar position to be able to buy multiple amounts of games.
Yes, and people keep mentioning the prices of board games and saying that, oh, it's an expensive hobby. I don't think it's an expensive hobby. I look at my friends' hobbies, and you can own a boat. That is pretty expensive.
Yeah.
You can do golf.
Yeah, that is pretty expensive.
That is pretty expensive. You can do downhill skiing.
That's pretty expensive.
How about downhill biking?
That's expensive. Yeah, I guess the bike's expensive. You know, video games are also very expensive.
Hmm.
Maybe with video games you can spend a lot of time, but you're alone. But like, I don't spend almost any money in video games. However, I do feel that that's a topic worth of maybe a debate.
Yeah.
Board games too expensive? Because I do get what you're saying, and maybe let's not go that much into detail in case we make it a debate. But compared to how much the games used to cost, they do feel that they have ballooned a bit the prices.
Let's put a pin there because we would have to take out our calculators and count the, what is it, the real wage increase, take into account inflation, check them.
Yeah, and I guess like that's also it. Like everything is more expensive now, and therefore board games are.
And you are most likely earning more than you did 5 years ago as well. Okay, that 150 games. Now, the number itself, that doesn't give always like a good idea of like, well, what does it mean in practice?
Yeah.
Have you ever used the Geek Group app?
No.
So it kind of like takes your Board Game Geek profile, does some little bit more number crunching there. Now, if I look at my collection, I have 38 games between the weights 1 and 1.24.
Okay.
I can tell you that all of those 38 games, I could probably teach you all of them right now because those are crazy simple games. They usually come in very small boxes.
Mm.
I have relatively few compared to my overall collection, these bigger boxes. And I'm talking about Ticket to Ride size boxes and heavier games, simply because those take a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
And those ones are, they also take more time to play.
Yeah.
Smaller games are fun to take with you. If it's fun, great. If it's not fun, move it along.
Move it along.
Yeah. It wasn't a big financial hit. Hey, one comparison to hobbies I will put here. One additional thing about the price of board games. I mentally usually compare board games to movie tickets.
Mm.
If I'm thinking about a movie night out in the town with Chilla compared to a board game that I would just go buy and we play it tonight and only tonight. If you're into exit games, that's going to be a cheaper experience than the movie night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if it's games that you can replay, then that becomes cheaper and cheaper by the play. I think you have mentioned this already.
Price per play.
Like people complain a lot about Pandemic, which mind you, compared to the prices of nowadays, Pandemic Legacy, sorry.
Yeah.
Mind you, compared to the prices of nowadays, it's peanuts. Like I think Pandemic used to cost something like €80.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, wow, it's such an expensive game for a game that you're going to end up throwing away at the end. But then like, you get to play at least 12 times with your friends, maybe even up to 24. And if you play with the full amount of four players, even if you play with two players, if you divide by the number of plays and the per player, it ends up being a very cheap per play price.
Yeah.
And per time spent enjoying the game.
Yeah. At least to me, board games, those special nights are at least 10 times more magical than the best movies that I've seen in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not even a competition. All right. But collecting games can get a little bit out of hand sometimes. We talked a little bit about our limits. I had that 50. I don't have that anymore. It just has to fit on the shelf. Was there anything you wanted to add to your limits, to your limit your purchases?
I have no limits.
Anyway?
Again, I'm thinking that if I need more space, I need more games, and I'll just buy a storage space.
Yeah.
If I don't able to... I mean, again, that's a little bit silly, but... And at some point, I will start just calling some games from my collection. I need to go over that threshold.
Yeah. Did you used to be more excited about getting new games than you are now?
I think right now, yes. Like, I'm in a place where I'm, like, not super excited about getting new games. I think it's just this kind of maybe lull in the year or something. I felt like that maybe for the last 6 months or something.
Yeah.
I hope it will pass. But definitely, I used to be more excited. But I feel it's just hopefully a phase of the year.
I used to also be a lot more excited about getting new games and having games on my wish list. Now, if someone wants to get less excited about buying new games, what is your number one tip for doing that, Luis?
You already said it. Don't go to Essen.
Don't go to Essen.
No, I think one thing that has made me at the beginning very excited to buy new games, but now a little bit more discouraged to buy new games, which is weird, is going to the meetup. Where like I have all of this bag of games that I'm excited to play, and then I go there and I'm not able to play any of them because we were not the right amount of people, or people had their own games.
Yeah.
And we had to play those because somehow they prefer to play Insider instead of the amazing new game called Aquaria.
My number one tip for getting less excited about buying games is try out Board Game Arena. Mm. There's so many games that you can try out there. I did that. I tried out so many of the games that I wanted to buy at some point. Then I learned how many games are just about contract fulfillment and the same mechanics being repeated over and over again. And that got me a lot less excited about new efficiency games.
Mm.
And therefore, I have much less stuff in my wish list these days.
Mm.
Yeah, that's my tip.
Do you have a wish list in Board Game Geek?
No.
Ah.
That's private. Private information. Only my wife can know my wish list when Christmas comes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody else knows your wish list.
No one else knows
where
my wish list.
Where do you maintain this wish list?
On an Excel spreadsheet, of course.
Okay.
That's the only way a board gamer can maintain their collection stats wish list is Excel.
Okay.
You're not doing Excels?
No.
And you're in the hobby?
Yeah, I have Board Game Geek. Why? I mean, you could have a wish list in Board Game Geek.
You are, what is it? You're in a closed...
I don't have a wish list.
Yeah, you're in a closed garden, my friend. What if Board Game Geek someday decides that they're going to start charging you $100 per day for maintaining the list? What are you going to do? Well, I can take my Excel spreadsheet, which is not an open format.
Yeah.
And I can go somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay, good to know.
So, now you know how many games me and Luis own as of recording.
Approximately.
Yeah. All right. We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode airs in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Bye-bye, okay.